Are you tired of the I can't mindset? The I'm not good enough mindset? Do you feel like your negative thoughts control your life? Well, you came to the right place. Because in the next 30 minutes, you will learn how to break free from the limiting mindset of anxiety, fear, victimization, depression, trauma, and self-hatred by reprogramming your subconscious mind. It's time to master your mind with Dr. Erica.
Hello, good people, and welcome to Master Your Mind with Dr. Erica. I am so glad that you are joining me today. We are in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic, and everyone is experiencing uneasiness, uncertainty. We are making do with the resources that we have, and we are just really needing some hope and just to strengthen our faith and know that things are going to be okay. We're going to get through this together as we always do. And I have with me a special guest. His name is Robert Ferguson. And Robert Ferguson has spent more than 20 years, okay, invested in helping thousands of people lose weight and improve overall health with the Diet Free Life methodology. Robert Ferguson is a nationally recognized certified nutritionist, fitness expert, speaker, and author, currently serving on the Presidential Task Force on Obesity for the National Medical Association. He has worked with the NAACP, the UNCF, and several other organizations devoted to supporting health in underserved communities. Okay. He has authored three books on nutrition, fitness, co-founded the Show Me Better Health Initiative with Aetna, and what can I say? He is a Stay Healthy's Health Ambassador and America's Fat Loss Coach, and that's just really touching the surface. So thank you so much, Robert, for being with me today and just sharing your wealth of knowledge with my listeners.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be here.
And so I just really want you to maybe shed some light on how this COVID-19 pandemic is really affecting our community, the African-American community, the communities that look like us, the black and the brown people. How is it disproportionately affecting our community?
Well, you know, the data is mind-blowing, right? I remember looking online or getting some type of alert. We're like in St. Louis, for instance, they said, you know, we have these deaths as a result of COVID-19, and all of them were African Americans.
Wow.
And right now all the data is saying that we're close to about 40% of the deaths from COVID-19 being African Americans. And I have my ideas about that, which, you know, we'll talk about, but it is disproportionate. It's really sad, you know, when you sit back and think about the fact that 13% of the population in America is African Americans, but yet a large majority of the people dying from COVID-19 are African Americans. So then the question is, why?
Right? Why is that?
Why? And I believe a lot of it has to do with the fact that we have pre-existing conditions that make us more prey to this virus. And as a result of that, and the lack of education that may be in some of these under-resourced communities, and some people who are just not being responsible, people who are living in crowded homes, apartments, et cetera, kids going in and out, bringing stuff in, parents don't know, you know, and they have these morbidities that they're dealing with. And as a result, they come down with the illness and the outcome isn't good.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's that. And it's fine. I was talking to a researcher about 3 weeks ago who is doing some FDA research and some clinicals right now on COVID-19. And she's become a really good friend, very accomplished person. And in that conversation, she was saying that she feels there's a link between vitamin D or lack thereof and the people who are not making it through COVID-19. And then this morning I saw Dr. Oz talking about what she was talking about 3 weeks ago, also looking at vitamin D, because there's like this, this this confusion around the vitamin D deficiency and how it impacts the health of African Americans. And what I mean by that is that when they look at vitamin D deficiency, you see an increase with osteoporosis, but only among Caucasians, not among African Americans. So we're actually stronger on that side. And I have my theories around that. But if you're looking for a solution, the best thing that people can do right now is everything that you think is being healthy, drinking water, being active, not eating deep fried food, thinking positively, all of that is going to help a person get through this COVID-19. And it's going to reduce the likeliness, if they were to attract the virus, of falling prey and potentially losing their life.
Right. And I think that's one of the things I want you to speak to, are these myths, because for so long we're programmed by our government that this is what a healthy meal should be. These are healthy eating habits. And as you grow and you learn and you question, you start to realize that a lot of that information is not true. So can you bust a little of the myths that we're still, a lot of our people in our community that, like you say, are limited in their access to information or resources? Let's bust a little of these myths so that we can begin to know what is healthy.
Well, you know, that's opening up a can of worms, which I have no problem doing. Because for years, when I'm asked a question like, Robert, what is the biggest challenge with, say, helping reduce the obesity and getting people healthier? And my answer has been for many years now, the biggest problem is that the uninformed, which is most people, are being influenced or led by the misinformed, which are the people who are in a position where they have a platform, they're influencers, they supposed to have the right information, but unfortunately, they're misinformed. And if you look at just the U.S. dietary guidelines and you just look at like what's going on with the government, for instance, would say that peanut butter is a protein source. Have you ever heard that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you look at the nutritional profile of peanut butter, you'll quickly see that peanut butter is 5 times highest in fat calories compared to protein calories. So my mom taught me when I was a kid, you know, if it looks like a duck, son, and sounds like a duck, well, it's probably a duck. So when I look at peanut butter, the reality is it's not a protein. I mean, it has protein in it, but it's a fat source, the same as avocado. And I believe it goes all the way back to the basics of that that's going to help people become more knowledgeable. Like, for instance, most people think that, you know, beans are a protein.
Yes.
They have protein, but they're highest in carbohydrate calories. So again, it's like, well, what's real, what's not real?
Yeah,
misinformation. And it's not necessarily the government's fault, it's our fault, because a lot of the people who have information and they feel empowered, if they know more than the person they're talking to, then they feel even more empowered. So then they're gonna just keep sharing the lie, and then that gets shared to someone else, and then that becomes the new truth. And they're so far off that no one knows what's real, right? Because the government comes out one day and says that coffee's okay. The next, you know, year they go cut back on the coffee.
Yeah, it's always 1 year it's good for you, the next year it's bad for you. And so there's so much conflicting information, you know, it's hard to know where to get the right source, and you are definitely the right source.
Yes, well, so let's look at like the pink elephant in the room all the time is McDonald's or fast food restaurants. So on one hand, everybody goes, okay, well, you know, the government has made it okay for them to, you know, the food is fit for human consumption. But then on the other hand, Super Size Me comes out and everybody says, oh, McDonald's is the worst thing in the world. Like, what is it? If they're the worst thing in the world, why is it that the FDA and the government says it's okay for them to run their business and to make this food available to all people?
Right.
Like, it doesn't make any sense. So one day we beat them up, the next day we don't. But then McDonald's is the problem. Why aren't we talking about Wendy's or Burger King or Del Taco or Taco Bell?
Right.
I would be willing to bet money that if we looked only at the health of, let's say, a piece of meat from McDonald's, I would be willing to bet that that piece of meat that I would eat from McDonald's is healthier for me than most fine dining restaurants.
Wow.
And this is why. McDonald's and all the other big restaurants, they are not in a position for lawsuits. They don't want anything to be traced back to them if someone ate it and they got sick. They have two and three different parties, legal entities, that are constantly looking at ways to bring them down so that they can see it before it happens. And these groups they're not biased. They're looking for problems and to keep McDonald's and a lot of these big companies like on the straight and narrow.
Right.
So they're testing and testing and testing. And, you know, like if you go back and just look at history, I think Jack in the Box over 20 years ago, they had a breakout, I think it was Salmonella or something like that, and basically almost shut down the whole franchise. Mm. They can't afford that. So, and then a lot of people don't realize that McDonald's as a restaurant sells more apples than any restaurant on the planet.
Wow.
They also, if you were to get a salad there, they have, they give you the option of organic salad dressing. All of their salad dressing is organic. It's Newman's Own. They did a deal with that brand years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that they removed all trans fats from their food. A lot of people don't know that they've reduced, you know, sodium in their food by over 15% in the last few years. So these companies, people are just real quick to assume the worst. Like if you tell your friend, oh, I'm going to go grab a filet of fish and I'll be right back. They go, oh, you eat McDonald's? I mean, you know what I mean?
Exactly, exactly. But you know what? You make a good point that because, like you say, they're at a higher risk for potential lawsuits, they have to protect themselves. They have to move towards healthier options despite what the FDA might allow, you know. Right. And I think that that is important for us to recognize is that we as consumers, whether it's consumers of food or other products, we have to be responsible to learn more about what that product or what that food source has to offer. And again, it kind of goes back to those myths of mm-hmm. what is healthy foods and what is not. And I know processed foods are not healthy. Now we're learning that a lot of foods are high in sugar. And that's not healthy. And
well, here's a question for you and anyone who's listening. Who defines what makes a food healthy or not?
The nutritional guidelines.
I mean, are they the ones? Or like even if you're with your friends and someone says, oh, I wouldn't eat that, it's not healthy. So well, how do they know it's not healthy?
Right. Well, for me, my thinking is if it's not grown, you know, if it's not grown in its organic form and it's a product that's processed, then it's not healthy. So to me, my mindset is that it has to be grown. It has to be a plant or an animal. If it's not directly related to that or it's not of that natural form, then I would say it's not healthy. But I don't know. What would you say?
Okay. I mean, it's a great conversation, right? It's kind of like you know, we teach our kids to lie without knowing that we teach them the lie. And the point there, I mean, do you teach your kids about Santa Claus? I mean, I did. And Santa Claus he doesn't exist the way I taught them about Santa Claus. So am I training them to lie? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's a whole, you can have a great conversation about that. And then you can look at a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah.
If I am a vegan and I don't eat any meat, and you tell me that you raise your own chickens and that they're organic and they got to run around cage free, and you say this is the healthiest meal I'm ever eaten, and then as a vegan I'm like, no, I don't consider eating chicken healthy. So I believe everyone, there's a lot of people who bring a different perspective, and part of the challenge is that everyone is so protective of what they believe is the truth that they're not willing to admit that maybe they're not accurate. So diet-free life, like the way I've helped people for years, is to meet them where they are. So that means I got to remove any bias. I have to remove and just be free. Now, if something has trans fats in it, and we absolutely know through scientific evidence that it's associated with increased likeliness of cancer. Well, we all came to that conclusion, National Institute of Health, World Health Organization, the consumers, and now trans fats are out of the food supply. So when it comes to like what makes it healthy, what I do with my kids is I focus on, does it taste good? The integrity of what I give them is the best that I can do. It's the best that I can do, whatever that may be. I don't need to qualify what I give them. Oh yeah, we're having a healthy meal tonight. Why? Well, if it's not healthy, then does that mean they're eating unhealthy? And so people naturally create judgment and disconnect based on the words they use as they talk about food and as they grow up, right? So coaching thousands of women over the years, many, many times, I will have a woman sit in front of me as I'm her nutrition coach, tell me that her weight challenges go all the way back to when her dad looked at her and blew his face up like, you need to cut back and you're eating too much.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Or go back to watching their mom get on the scale and battle with her weight.
Yeah. Wait, I got to take a break, but we're going to be right back. Okay. All right. Welcome back to part two. I am in an amazing discussion with Robert Ferguson, really talking about the lies that we tell ourselves about what is healthy, what is not healthy, you know, the FDA standards, the, you know, organic standards. And so I really want Robert to kind of shed some light on really what is this truth and how can we begin to put it together so that we're making better food choices for ourselves.
All right. Well, you know, when I was going to school for dietetics and learning, I was a little older. I got my master's in counseling psychology. Fast forward, as I got into the weight loss space, I had to go back to school. So going back to school, a little bit more mature than most of the people in the room, I'm going to ask questions. And so one day we were talking about this thing called the glycemic index. You ever heard of that?
Yes.
Okay, so for those who are new to the glycemic index, it is the science that a lot of these big companies, from Weight Watchers to Jenny Craig, South Beach, they all refer to it at one point or another as science behind how their programs work, which is fine. Now, in the glycemic index was created in 1981 for diabetics. So what they did is they took every carbohydrate food on the planet, basically, and they took 50 grams of that carb. So if it was a white potato, 50 grams of carbs from the white potato, 50 grams of the carbs from broccoli, 50 grams, and the list goes on and on. And they compared how, when you consumed that carbohydrate, they compared the breakdown of that food in your body, how it becomes sugar in your blood over a two and a half hour period. They compared that to glucose, pure sugar. Okay. So glucose is given a number 100. Right, so that means, whoa, that's high on the glycemic index. A white potato, conservatively, is given the number 85. So if you're a diabetic, you don't eat white potatoes,
right?
Because they're high in sugar.
Yeah.
Well, 50 grams of potato chips that come from the white potato that goes through the process, as you mentioned earlier, 50 grams is low on the glycemic index. It's given the number 55. So a white potato that comes from the earth is 85. Potato chips that come from the potato, this process, is given a number 55. So based on blood sugar, the processed potato chips are better for me. Scientifically proven.
That's what it seems like.
That's the science. You can't argue the science. So then my question is, why is that? And the reason why the processed potato chip is better on blood sugar is because there's fat, there's oil woven in the chip. And the chip, when consumed with the fat, the carb in that is slowed down. So it gets to your blood sugar slower. So the solution in all of that is add butter to your white potato. And now it's better on your blood sugar.
And it tastes better.
And it tastes better. So people have forgotten, or these companies or these leaders forgot to make it clear that the glycemic index is based on eating a single food, not based on what you eat with it.
So it's the combination of the foods.
And that leads us to, as I'm always telling people, I go, look, eating a Twinkie is not unhealthy and it's not going to kill you. But if you eat the whole box at one time and you do it all the time, you're going to have some problems. You with me?
Yes.
But what happens is we're so quick to demonize. So one of my friends and associate, Dr. Hobb, out of the University of Kansas City, he runs dietetics. And so in 2011, he did his own study to demonstrate that it really comes down to how much you're consuming. So he ate a Twinkie every 3 hours for 10 weeks. At the end of that 10 weeks, he lost 27 pounds. His triglycerides got better. His blood sugar got better. He dropped body fat percent. His BMI improved. All the health markers in his body improved. And he was leaner and he felt better. And he got on CNN and all the shows. And if you watch, you can go and Google it. You go, oh my goodness. Why don't we hear about that like we did with Super Size Me? Because no one wants to really look at the truth. The Twinkie has to be bad. It has to be something you don't eat all the time. It has to be put into this lane where that's only for poor people, or that's for people who are not knowledgeable or educated. So what I've done over the years is to show people how to combine their food. So I'll give you some examples.
Okay.
One of my clients named Bobby loses 83 pounds. And I taught him one basic thing. I said, Bobby, when you eat bread, don't eat fries. Bread with fries adds inches to your thighs. So if you want the burger with the bread, let's say the bread trumps the fries, that's just for me. I'm just gonna eat the burger. I'm not gonna eat the fries. But if I really want the fries, then I'm gonna do a lettuce wrap. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we made that simple. And when people eat the foods in those combinations, then they make it work. So then they go, well, what about Thanksgiving and what about this? And they start looking for reasons for it not to work. I say, okay, you wake up, it's Thanksgiving, it's Easter. You know you guys are going to be eating a lot that day, right? So you know you're going to eat at least a couple meals. Well, in the course of a day, you're going to eat three. So on those days, I wake up, have a snack. 2 to 3 hours later, I have a snack. 2 to 3 hours later, I have another snack. Because if I don't eat, my blood sugar is going to drop. It's going to be like going grocery shopping on an empty stomach. And that's not good. You don't rationalize the same. It's not good. So then 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, we have our first meal. Today, I'm going to eat the mac and cheese. I'm going to eat the mashed potatoes. I'm going to have the stuffing, right? But I'm not going to eat them all at the same time. So on the first meal, I'm probably going to have the turkey or the ham with the mac and cheese, maybe some collard greens. I'm good. 2 to 3 hours later, I'm having meal number two. I already had mac and cheese. I want some stuffing now. And so I know what goes with what, and we teach that. So then you're able to eat what you want. And the feeling, as you know, as a psychologist, when you know something and you do it, you bridge that gap between knowing and doing, you feel so much better on the inside.
Yeah.
And that's where all of the success that I've achieved and the reason why I believe so many people are successful with this is that they're empowered with tools that they can actually apply, they can actually do. And when they're doing it, they now know it, they're reaping the benefits of it. Oh,
yeah.
And why would you stop?
Right, and it's saying you don't have to go out and buy these special foods or, you know, special ingredients. You can use what you have in your fridge, in your cabinet, and make it work, depending on how you put it together. Now, a popular thing right now is this intermittent fasting. And you're saying no. You're saying eat every 2 to 3 hours. That's what your body needs to keep it burning fat and not spiking that.
Right. Like, do you have kids?
Yes, I have three.
Okay. And when they were born, how frequent did you feed them?
Every 2 to 3 hours.
Okay. That nurtures their growth. That nurtures their metabolism, right?
Yes.
Why wouldn't you do intermittent fasting on a baby?
Right. You got me. You got me on that. You know,
I mean, with all of that, unless it's like not. And you know what? Right. A baby will. They'll cry. They'll get really loud. And eventually their metabolism will slow. They will compensate for not getting food and they won't cry. They can go longer periods of time. And then they'll have those biological desires for food and then they'll cry again.
Yeah.
And they can deal, but it's not nurturing them for positive growth.
Yeah. And I love that because I love to eat and I love food. And I love the concept that you said, if it tastes good, why are you depriving yourself of something that tastes good? And, you know, it's a good feeling. And so maybe can you talk a little bit about the difference between the slow carbs and the fast carbs? Because I think when you're putting your meal together.
All right. You did a little research, huh?
You need to know, right? I'm learning.
Well, you know, when I was putting this thing together, I needed to have something that could work for my mom. So my mom was that person who would lose 100 pounds, gain it back. Lose 100 pounds, gain it back. And so it needed to be simple. And so when I was looking at the government guidelines, I was like, okay, everything's out of whack. We need to come up with a new language to make this work. So most people got what a protein source was, chicken, fish, turkey, tofu, if it had a face crawled.
Let me ask, does shrimp count for protein?
Yes.
Okay.
So imagine getting a full list of what's a protein. Okay, so then I said, all right, what's a fast carb? Fast carb are most of the things we like the most, right? So people like wine, they like liquor, they like bread, pasta, pizza, white rice, brown rice. Okay, all of that is fast carb. So earlier when I was talking about eating like Thanksgiving type food, I was like, I'm gonna eat the mac and cheese now, fast carb. Next meal, I'm gonna have the stuffing, fast carb. Then later on, I'm gonna have the mashed potatoes, fast carb. I'm not gonna have all the fast carbs together. Because that's what shifts your body into fat storing mode.
Okay.
So in answer to a question you asked earlier and to kind of demonstrate how simple this is, when I was doing work with Aetna Insurance, we did a 1,000-person trial. And in this trial, it made us become evidence-based. So yes, it sounds too good to be true what I'm saying. It's out there a little bit. It's a little different. But a company put up a couple $1 million. We put it to the test. We had an 81% retention, which is unheard of. And we had 100% of those people lost weight, felt better, looked better. Everything was better.
Wow.
One of the things I did when we were working with a group in an under-resourced community is I said, okay, I'm going to make a fat-burning meal for everybody and explain this for less than 80 cents. And it's going to be balanced and in accordance with the U.S. dietary guidelines. They were like, okay, let's see this. I said, we're going to get some ramen noodles. You guys ever eat top ramen?
Yep.
Because you're in college. I mean, that was like, that's your go-to when you're hungry. Well, it's still a go-to. A lot of people, like, even during COVID, I go in, like, all the top ramen's gone. Right? So you get the base of the top ramen. You take the packet that has all the flavoring in it, and you throw that in the trash because that's where all the negatives are.
Okay.
But then you go, okay, what about flavor? Well, I could use bunion or I could use like a broth and boil my noodles. I could do that. Or knowing that I'm going to use some herbs, spices, hot sauce, I'm just going to boil the noodles. So the noodles are my fast carb. Then I'm going to get a hot dog. Now, when I did this, like, which is going to be the protein, I mentioned hot dog. Some of these people, to include some physicians, about lost their mind. They're like, Robert, hold up. We're not going to be promoting hot dogs. I go, really? I said, when I go to Whole Foods, they have organic turkey dogs. They have organic beef dogs. They have tofu dogs, turkey dogs. So when I say hot dog, their mind went right to the negative.
Mm-hmm.
You choose the dog you want to eat. That's up to you. And if all I got is a pork dog, okay, that's the dog I got. If I can afford to get what you want. So you choose your protein. So okay. Once we got over that hurdle, I go, so you have your protein and hot dog. You have your fast carb with the noodles. We're going to blend those together. Now we're going to get some tomatoes. Tomatoes are a slow carb. So tomatoes, broccoli, asparagus, collard greens, mustard greens. So I give you a full list of what makes for a slow carb. So now I got this bowl. I got some. I got my protein and the hot dog. I got my noodles, my fast carb. I got my slow carb tomatoes. And I also went with tomatoes in this demonstration because when people have some challenges with dental, and people are maturing in under-resourced communities, they can't just be, you know, eating asparagus. It's too tough. Mm-hmm. So a tomato, and tomatoes, like, food banks always have tomatoes. Tomatoes, we don't have a shortage of tomatoes, not like it's avocado. So now we got that together. So then I took some avocado, if you choose, or maybe some cheese. That's called a fat. And I added that to it. Then I took some hot sauce, sprinkled that in there. Someone else may use like some type of marinade or whatever, herb spices, put it in there. And you just created a balanced fat-burning meal for 80 cents.
Wow.
And all you needed to know was, is it a protein? Is it a fast carb? Is it a slow carb? Once you have that list, you can build a meal out of whatever foods you want to eat.
Wow. And do you need to add a fat with every meal too?
No. You don't have to add a fat, okay. And you don't have to add a condiment.
Okay, so. Wonderful, wonderful. Man, thank you for taking the time to share your wealth of knowledge, and I'm hungry for more. You take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Master Your Mind with Dr. Erica. We will be back next with another terrific episode that will allow you to master your mind. Please visit hemphappier.com for more information about Dr. Erica and CBD oil. See you next week.